Traditional revenue sources for public media and really the media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to these trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We are tightening up expenses, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever. We can't cut back on our mission, so we are turning to listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't yet given, now is the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Questions for the global banking system linger as Russia's invasion of Ukraine ramps up. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. There are further calls this morning for much tougher action on Russia's access to the global banking system as President Vladimir Putin's forces take fighting to the edge of the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv. Many think sanctions announced by Europe and the U.S. yesterday still don't go far enough. And the Ukrainian government spoke of what it feels is its increasing isolation, pleading for more support. Here's President Vladimir Zelensky addressing the nation early this morning.
This morning, we are protecting our country alone, just as yesterday. The most powerful forces in the world are observing from far away.
That, of course, is Mr. Zelensky's response to Western sanctions on Russian banks and individuals unleashed yesterday, which did not include cutting off Russian access to SWIFT. That's the system connecting thousands of global financial institutions. European finance ministers say today the option is still on the table, but it's a measure that will only be used as a last resort. The French finance minister, Bruno Le Maire, says the European Union wants to isolate Russia financially in response to its attack on Ukraine. Despite fighting and the response to it continuing across Ukraine. Stock benchmarks across Europe today are up in the 0.7% range this morning, following Wall Street higher. Oil prices have eased slightly off Thursday's highs. Brent and West Texas intermediate crude prices are hovering at the $99 and $92 a barrel mark. Russ Mould is investment director at AJ Bell. He explains why markets have struck a slightly different tone this morning.
I think it's a sense that they feel that at the moment things are as bad as perhaps they could have feared, given that there is a military conflict taking place and oil and gas have gone up a lot and share prices have gone down a lot. And there is that old saying that you should buy on the sound of cannon and sell on the sound of trumpets, because when there's war and things look terrible, that's when share prices go down and things are at their cheapest. So maybe you do have some investors who are perhaps tempted to buy on the dip, as it were.
Is it a reaction to perhaps less severe sanctions than we may have been expecting at this time yesterday?
I think that's definitely part of it as well, and I'm sure that's exercising political minds across the West. Equally, you still do have other commodities moving up very sharply. Wheat is at a 14-year high because Ukraine is in many ways the breadbasket of Europe. Aluminium is trading at a record high, nickel at an 11-year high, gold at an 18-month high. So things that are produced in Russia, which if there are sanctions imposed, could become more scarce, they're still moving up quite sharply.
Sanctions really is sort of the word of the day, and we're just hearing reports that Russia has prepared retaliatory measures on the West. And, you know, there's been a lot of criticism yesterday that, as we have been speaking about, that the West's sanctions against Russia didn't go far enough, including not cutting Russia off from the SWIFT financial system. And that was really out of concern for how it would affect some of Europe's biggest banks. What is the concern when it comes to European banks?
I think with SWIFT, it's a secure messaging system that enables rapid and safe cross-border transfers of cash and smooth trade. It handles trillions of dollars a day. I guess the worry is you have exposure to Russia and you're doing business there, there is the small chance that you don't get your money back if the person on the other side of the trade gets into financial trouble. That's a very worst case scenario. In other scenarios, it means delays, it means costs, it means therefore less profit. So there are some other issues to be aware of, but it's effectively the danger that, heaven forbid, the opposition party goes bankrupt on you and you don't get your money at all.
While there has been plenty of criticism, there have been people who have argued, though, that actually sanctioning Russia's banks is a stronger tool longer term. Do you agree with that?
I think it would be a major inconvenience for Russia. There unfortunately would be ways around it. You know, through, even if they're banned from SWIFT, they could use the Chinese equivalent, which I think is known as CIPS. They could funnel their trade through countries that have not imposed sanctions. So there are other things that they can do.
And that's perhaps part of the fear, too, is that cutting off Russia from access to SWIFT and cutting off banks' access to big dollar payments, it pushes Russia closer to others of its allies like China.
That, from a geopolitical perspective, is definitely one concern. And again, from an economic perspective, if we do stop doing trade with Russia in certain key industries, there is no, you know, Russia may decide, as you said, to retaliate. And that mean that again explains why nickel, aluminium, wheat, oil, gas, and other things that Russia exports in large quantities and the West needs. That explains why those prices are going up very quickly, feeding further down the line again, fears of inflation and maybe that central banks in the West have to raise borrowing costs faster and higher than perhaps they would have liked to have done.
And as part of Russia's response to protect its own economy in this situation, there is talk already about the central bank raising interest rates by a fairly, what we would think, shocking amount.
Yes, I mean, the Central Bank of Russia did this in 2014 after the Crimean invasion, and when the ruble went down very sharply, it put interest rates up by nearly 7 percentage points almost in one go. And there's talk of a 3-4 percentage point increase from the current level of 9.5% in March to defend the ruble and also to try and dampen down Russia's inflation problem. Inflation there is moving towards 10%. The ruble goes down. That means your imported goods are more expensive. So that will have an impact on Russian spending power. It could feed public discontent there. So the central bank will try and deal with that as best it can.
But certainly more public discontent would not help the Kremlin in this situation, would it? I mean, it creates potentially a bigger problem.
It does. It creates a perception problem and it creates a political problem. And one of the key features here could be food prices. You know, with wheat at a 14-year high, corn prices elevated. It's normally food prices that tick people over the edge in terms of public displays of discontent. And you can see that whether it was China in 1989 or the Arab Spring of 2011 or Russia in 1918 or France in 1789. It's bread that ultimately tips people over the edge in its cost. And that's something that we need to be aware of as well.
Russ Mould, Investment Director at AJ Bell. Thanks for breaking this down for us.
Thank you.
As Russian forces have inched closer to Ukraine's capital, we've seen gridlock on roadways, lines forming at ATMs, and people stocking up on gas and food. Business, then, is far from the minds of many now. That's according to Jock Mendoza-Wilson. He's the deputy chair of the UK-Ukrainian Chamber of Commerce, who's been trying to leave the country for 2 days now.
If I'm honest today, we're not really speaking about business or necessarily to business leaders. I'm not talking to the people I know business as businessmen. We're talking about people who are in a major crisis and seeking to do the best we can for our families, our friends and our employees. That's really the only subjects of conversation that have come up.
And what is the situation like on the ground? Because as you mentioned, it's taken you a while to get to where you are. We've seen huge lines of traffic on the roadways. So what's the feeling like?
Well, I spent the day in that huge line. It was one big traffic jam, probably the biggest car park I've ever seen. People were calm and, you know, we were driving by the rules and being respectful of others. As we drove through different places, people were out doing essential shopping, attempting to get some cash from bankomats if they still had some. Basically, most of them were preparing for what lies ahead, either by hunkering down in their homes or heading for the border.
Is it still that way? Is there still a sense of calm?
Yeah, well, I'm not in Kyiv today. I've just been out here in the city that I'm in. It was very quiet. Streets were deserted. Very few cars on the streets. Most shops closed. Some banks operating, but none of the bankomats had any cash in that I went to. Chemists were still open, and some food shops were still open. But the sense was of it was eerily quiet for a busy Friday in a relatively large city.
Is there conversation about action taken by the West in response to Russia's decision to invade Ukraine? Because there's been obviously a lot of criticism, and we've heard calls from help and lots of criticism from President Zelensky himself. Is that something that you're hearing on the ground as well and a feeling that you're seeing echoed?
Well, I'm just hearing an incoming jet in the background, so that's concerning me. And I think, of course, people are critical and believe that maybe policies could have been taken that could have avoided this crisis. But that's the benefit of hindsight.
Well, please stay safe in your onward journey. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Yep, thank you very much, Victoria. Take care.
An update now on a story we brought you earlier this week. European soccer's governing body UEFA has announced the final match of the Champions League tournament will not be played in St. Petersburg, Russia, as initially planned. Instead, it's moving to Paris. The BBC's Will Bain explains this comes after mounting pressure to make the move.
This kind of became a case of when, not if, but UEFA, European football's governing body, today confirming after a vote of their committee that the final will be stripped from Gazprom Arena in St. Petersburg and will instead be moved to the Stade de France in Paris. But as you say, that pressure doesn't just stop there. Yesterday, we saw the German second division professional club Schalke, one of the biggest clubs in Germany, remove Gazprom, the Russian gas giant, its main shirt sponsor. It has its name on the front of its playing shirt. Normally, that will be removed from the club's shirt. Gazprom, as we mentioned earlier in the week, is a big sponsor of the UEFA Champions League. Lots of pressure on its branding to be removed from the stadiums, and particularly that final when it is in Paris. And also pressure on other sports too. So Formula One's governing body, the FIA, coming under pressure. They have a race that normally takes place on the streets of Sochi, the Black Sea resort in Russia. The current Formula One world champion, the Dutchman Max Verstappen, tweeting yesterday that he doesn't think it should take place there. So not just football coming under pressure to distance itself from big Russian money and big Russian companies.
Is UEFA worried about retaliation of any kind from Russia? What has it said in its statement?
Well, look, Gazprom's a significant sponsor, and I think it was very noticeable that in UEFA's official statement today, they didn't mention anything about the conflict in Russia or Ukraine. In fact, they spent the very short three-paragraph statement thanking the French government for being so accommodating and letting them have the Stade de France. Yesterday, in a statement, they did say they were concerned about the situation in Russia and Ukraine and that they were watching it and that they hoped for peace. Gazprom signed a new deal, Victoria, last year with UEFA that's worth about $40-50 million a season. So it's one of their key sponsors here. It's not easy, as we're finding with lots of businesses, to untangle yourself from big Russian money here in Europe. So yeah, I guess there probably is a bit of reticence there from the governing body. And they've got some big awkward geopolitical questions coming up, because international qualifying is going on for football's World Cup that is later next year, and Russia are meant to play Poland in Moscow on the 24th of March. And there's serious question marks and pressure from lots of big countries saying Russia should be banned from playing those games and that no games should be allowed to take place in Russia. So, yeah, lots of headaches for UEFA at the moment.
The BBC's Will Bain. Thanks for breaking this down.
No problem. Thanks, Victoria.
Finally, Russia's civil aviation regulator has said British airlines have been banned from landing at Russia's airports and from crossing its airspace. Moscow said the move was a response to the, quote, unfriendly decisions by the UK aviation authorities. The moves come a day after the UK banned Russia's national airline Aeroflot from landing in Britain. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.